MechCast, Saturday, December 12th, 2015. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Glad to have you back here with me for another episode, and this is going to be a really fun episode. I'm not doing the normal thing. We don't have the news and feedback this week because I did an interview and sat down and talked with Scott Johnson from the Frog Pants Network. You may also know him from his webcomic, My Extra Life. And I wanted to get him on because, it's been a while since we've had him on. And the other reason is I wanted to talk to him a little bit about the iPad Pro and a perspective being a web comic artist and actually using digital tools to create his work. So we're going to talk about his process, how he does that, what he thinks about the iPad as a new potential tool, and dive into a few other things. It turned out to be very interesting, as it always is when I sit down with Scott. So great guy, a lot of fun, and I think you're really going to like this episode. But before we get into all of that, I need to take a quick moment and thank a couple show sponsors, starting off with Gazelle. If you have old devices lying around, an old iPhone, an iPad, and let's face it, those of us who are geeks and nerds and into Apple stuff, we upgrade, right? You've got your old devices lying around, and they're just sitting there collecting dust. Maybe you could go hand them down to somebody. Maybe you're going to, at some point, try and sell it. Well, now is a great time because Gazelle makes it super easy to get cash for your old iPhone, your iPad, what have you, your old Apple gear. All you have to do is go to their website, gazelle.com, and you can get a free, easy, and quick online offer just by answering a few questions. Tell them what kind of device you have, what kind of condition it is, whether you have accessories. They'll even accept broken devices, and boom, right on the screen there, you get an instant price quote. And there's no obligation, you just get the offer. But when you see what it is, I think you're going to be impressed and you're going to want to take advantage of it. And they make the process of sending your device in also easy. You get free shipping on your item, and in many cases, they will provide a box for you to ship it in. And you box it all up, you ship it off to them, they receive it, they'll wipe out all your personal information from your device, so you don't have to worry about that, and you'll get a fast and quick payment. They'll process it quickly, they will pay you fast, and you have your choice of payment options. You can get paid by check in the mail, you can do a direct deposit into a PayPal account, or you can even opt for an Amazon gift card. And if you choose that last option, you're going to get 5% more on your offer. They've been around for a long time. They've been doing this. They have over 1 million customers. They've paid out over $200 million to those customers. I've used the service many times for my old devices, and I love it. So you can get cash for your old devices now. Just go to gazelle.com and check it out. They'll have all the details, and a big thank you to Gazelle for their support of the MacCast. I'd also like to take a moment to tell you about Drobo. Drobo is a family of safe, expandable, and very easy to use storage devices. They offer a whole range of products for IT professionals all the way through to home users. And if you're not familiar with Drobo, they have this basic principle, and that is that your data is essential and you need to keep it safe. And also, you're always probably going to need more storage. And they've designed their products to fulfill those principles with those ideas in mind. And really, the main thing, I think, is that they're so simple to use. To protect your data and keep it safe, they've developed a technology that they call Beyond RAID. And what this does is it allows you to take hard drives, load them into the Drobo, you can mix and match them, and it will figure all of the technical RAID stuff out. It'll figure out how to put those together so that you get data redundancy and data protection, and it allows you to expand on the fly. So you can start out with the drives that you have, and when you need more storage, you can just pop one out, pop another one in. Also, if you have an issue, a drive fails, it will tell you about it, and again, you can get a replacement drive, pop that one out, pop the new one back in, and it will repair itself. It'll put it all back together and keep all of your data safe. And they have software To help out and manage that, the Drobo dashboard makes it easy to see how much data you have available for storage, how much is being used for data protection, and how much overhead you have, so you can fully optimize the kinds of drives that you have in there to get the maximum amount of storage and still maintain the data protection that you want. They've really figured out all the hard stuff of the hardware and software of setting up RAID, and that's what I really like about it, and it's why I use the products. They also have lights right on the device, so you can monitor the storage, you can check the status and see what's going on. It'll alert you if you have a failure or a problem so that you can easily deal with it. And a few other important features of Drobo's are they have the ability in some models to get SSD accelerated performance. So if you need a lot of speed, you have an option to put an mSATA SD card in there. Many are also optimized for Time Machine, so if you want to use them for Time Machine backups, you can do that. I have both the Gen 3 Drobo and a Drobo 5D. I use them mainly to do archiving and backup. It allows me to keep all of my movies, photos, critical files safe and backed up in a redundant system. All those things that I talked to you about, make sure you have an archive of your photo library and your movies and all those things. Drobos are perfect for that kind of thing. I have a Gen 3 Drobo also hooked up to a Mac Mini on my network, so I can have network storage, but Drobo also offers the 5N, which is a complete NAS solution, so you don't even need to use a Mac. And here's the best part. Right now, MacCast listeners can get $100 off either a Drobo Mini, a Drobo 4-Bay, or a Drobo 5N by going to drobo.com/MacCast. And when you're checking out, use the code CAST100, that's CAST100, and you're going to get $100 off any one of those models. And that means you can get in on a Drobo for as low as $199 right now. That is a killer deal. So take advantage of that, and a big thanks to Drobo for their support of the show. So let's get in and talk with Scott Johnson a little bit. Scott is a webcomic artist. He's the creator of the My Extra Life comic, which you can check out at myextralife.com. He's also the founder and creator of the Frog Pants Studios podcast network, with shows like The Instance, The Morning Stream, Film Sack. I love Film Sack. If you haven't checked that out, that is a show where they sit down, they watch a movie on Netflix, and then come back and do some commentary on it. It's usually a campy, you know, funky movie, a lot of times from my childhood. That's probably why I like it. They've done quite a few 80s movies, and it's really a lot of fun. It's got a little flavor of Mystery Science Theater 3000, but, you know, not live. But they're kind of bagging on, basically sacking, what they call it, sacking films. So check that out if you haven't heard that podcast. And then in addition, he also created the Nerdtacular Conference, which I attend every year. It's not happening this year. They're taking a year off, but it's going to be back in 2017. It's a yearly conference for the fans of his podcast network, but basically it celebrates gaming, comics, the podcast shows, generally geek culture, and it is a ton of fun. So if you haven't checked that out, that happens usually in the summer. Again, it's going to be back in 2017. But I sat down with Scott. I wanted to talk to him about the iPad Pro and his workflows and some of the things he's doing. So here's my conversation with Scott Johnson. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Hey, man, I'm fine. It's been too long.
Yeah. Well, we're both busy, although I think you might be more busy because you've got a giant podcast empire to run.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it's a self-made, the giant part is self-made, and it becomes, sometimes you have to stand back from it and go, all right, is there a little fat I could trim here? But then I fall in love with the fat and I don't want to leave the fat.
Yeah.
So yeah, to your original point, yes, I am too busy.
Podcasting is an illness and we haven't recovered, and I hope we never do.
There's no cure, really, we know it.
That's good. Yeah. It's actually good in this case.
Sure.
Because we like doing this stuff. Well, I wanted to get you on actually to talk about not so much podcasting, although I guess that may come into play here a little bit. But really, I've had you on in the past to talk about your artwork. You know, the original way I found out about what you did is through your My Extra Life comic, web comic, and also then the podcast that was, I guess it was quasi-related to that, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you shared the name.
Sure. It had launched sort of, I guess, from it. It was aimed at that audience. So, yeah, I think those things are connected.
And the rest is history. But I know we talked a long, long time ago kind of about your production workflow. And the ultimate thing is to get into, I wanted to get somebody who was an artist on who I knew pretty well to talk about the iPad Pro and the Pencil. And I think we'll get into that stuff in a little bit. But where I wanted to start for people who maybe aren't familiar with your webcomic and the work and stuff like that, and just to kind of give some background into the conversation we're going to have, I wanted to find out, and I was curious myself to know about your workflow for that.
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, I wanted to be a comic strip artist. I don't know if you knew this. I don't know if I
did not know how this never has come up before.
Yeah. That was like my dream when I was a little kid. And then, you kind of grow up and you get a little more realistic about things. Because I started doing research. I mean, it was enough that when I was like really young, like 12, I started looking into it. And I learned that, that's a really hard life to go down. Because you'd read these stuff about these guys who are like doing syndicated comics. And I've since watched like some of the documentaries that have come out like Stripped, mm-hmm. and found out, oh, I probably made a pretty good choice, because that's a tough road to hoe.
Yeah, there are only so many Charles Schultzes and Watersons that come out of that aftermath.
So then I decided, that I was going to go into graphic arts, because my dad was kind of in that industry. He was a marketing executive. And so I ended up going into like graphic design and print production and all that stuff, pre-press, right? So I changed gears. But I've always been curious about the whole creative process, and just I'm curious with you now that things are digital, how do you work? Like, what's your workflow for like putting together the comic? Are you starting on paper? Is it sort of chaotic? What goes on?
Well, this is a really, it's interesting. No one's ever asked me about this part of the process, funny enough.
Yeah.
Because what ends up happening is, there's a comic once or twice a week and people see it and they just go, oh, there it is. And
yeah,
he made it. There's no other connective tissue to figure out where or how or when did the idea come, or did it go through iterations? Did it change between the first idea when it finally got put up there?
Yeah.
Was it funnier the first iteration and Scott just didn't think so? Or, there's so many layers to that. And layers. That's funny because I use layers when I draw it too. But anyway, the old flow. So the iPad Pro and the Pencil are obviously new, right?
Right.
Newish. Couple of weeks is all we've really had with it. And so I have just recently tweaked the way I do things. But here's how it used to work. I would oftentimes wake up at like 2:30 in the morning with a dumb idea. Not always, but that would sometimes be the best time for me to have an idea.
Isn't that the way it goes?
Yeah, it's so stupid. And sometimes those are the worst ideas, but you just think they're great at 2:30. So I would lean over to my iPhone or a pad of paper or whatever was in reach, and I would jot down the idea so that I wouldn't forget it, because I will always forget them if I don't.
I've heard a lot of creative people do that. Like, they always would make sure to keep a notepad or something by the side of the bed. Mm-hmm. I guess now you have an iPhone, so what else do you need? But
yeah, it almost sounds cliche in a way, like everybody just wakes up and writes these things down. But it really is a way to capture these, some of the stranger thoughts that kind of come out of nowhere. And I've found that when I'm not in the middle of my worky day, where it's like I've got stuff scheduled and I have to be thinking in a very methodic left brain kind of way, my ideas don't come then. They never do. Right. And I don't know why. There's like, it's a barrier to creativity sometimes to be productive. And sometimes you just need to be in a weird, like half awake state for your creative side to go, wait a minute, I'm still here, and then to pop out with something cool. So for whatever reason, that's just kind of the weird time that some of that happens for me.
Yeah. I have a series of weird website and app ideas that are written down that come from that same place.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So it's the same thing. Like, there's a lot of creativity to be gathered in the wee hours, or, when our brains are less occupied, I suppose. So I'll jot that stuff down. And then the way it used to work is I would kind of collect that. And by jotting it down, I mean, I'd put it in Wunderlist or Things or, some kind of productivity app, and it would sync to the cloud. And then I'd get on desktop later and say, all right, what weird ideas did I have this week? And I would chuck 4 out of the 5 because they were dumb. But then the fifth one stuck and I'm like, oh, that one's all right. So I'll use that. That's usually the way. Sometimes it's like, oh, there's a current event and I want to riff on that. Or there's a I've got a funny take on this thing that's being talked about a lot, or this new video game that's out, or this movie that's happening, or this even this sort of social political things happening. I think I have a take on that. So sometimes it comes from those things and just happens on the spot. But for the most part, that's kind of the way it worked. Well, the problem with that was just words, and that still required me to get into the studio, up to the Wacom, crank it all up, get my Mac Pro going, you know, run Photoshop, whatever I'm using, and start, you know, drawing in the way that I always do. Just start it and go. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes it would be, oh, I got this funny idea. I'm in a restaurant. And I'm going to write this on a napkin, like literally draw it on a napkin with a ballpoint pen. And then what I would do is take a photo of it with my iPhone. Mm-hmm. Lately, I use Adobe Capture for this. So,
oh, that's a new app. I haven't played with that.
Yeah, I want to sneak this in, actually. This is kind of cool. So if you have a CC subscription, just lately, what, a week ago or something, week and a half ago, they launched this little app called Capture, Adobe Capture, and you have to have an account to use it. So it's part of the subscription. But it's an iOS app that allows you, I think it's on Android as well. Not sure about that. Anyway, it allows you to take, do all kinds of things. One thing that it does, like website creators might love this, and others who are looking for color scheme generation. It has an option in there where the very first thing is you take it turns the camera on, and then whatever you face your camera at, whatever landscape or wall or dog or face or desktop or whatever you're aiming your camera at, it will smartly, it has little dots flying around the screen that you can see, and it will smartly take all of the colors in that view, whatever you're looking at, and generate a complementary color scheme that you can then save out immediately to your Creative Cloud and boom, use it in Photoshop or Illustrator or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's part of what used to be their Cooler. They used to have a thing called Cooler, K-U-L-E-R, something like that.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never used that.
Yeah, I did because of being a web developer. That's what it would let you build color palettes, you know, and give you all the hex code that you needed.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I guess this is almost identical, except it's, you know, point, click, boom, there it is.
Well, I think they've integrated it now into other parts of, it's been slowly integrating into other apps, so I didn't realize it was in Capture now, but that makes sense.
Yeah, it's super cool, and you see the preview while you're aiming it, so you're like, that's perfect. Those are all the flesh tones I want, or those are all the blues and hues and whatever I need, or whatever. It's very helpful for me, because I'm always trying to, even with comics, it's like, I need to, when I color this, I want to make it so everything seems to be jiving. I don't want to create a lot of color blocking that's jarring to the eye. Or whatever. So it's very useful that way. But the very next option is the one I use for this. So I jot down like a comic idea or a character or whatever on a napkin, let's say an actual character drawing. Mm-hmm. Capture lets me take a photo of it. It will convert it into a vector image of pure black and white. So I'm not dealing with a bunch of artifacts or other stuff. And export that thing directly to wherever I want.
That's cool.
That's super cool. So what I've done with that is I've basically created my sketch layer, because usually what will happen is when I'm in production, it's like, all right, well, here's a sketch layer. And now on top of that, I'll ink that and then I'll do all the finish work. Well, now the sketch layer was done at the restaurant, you know, on the napkin, and is already there waiting for me in the Creative Cloud. And I get home and launch it and boom, I'm already, you know, my sketch layer is done.
Let me ask you about the quality of that image, and maybe it doesn't matter for your process, but I used to work, when I did logo design and when I was working in that graphic design field, you know, I would use Illustrator a lot, and there used to be a tool, now man, I can't even remember what it was, where you could take a scan and Adobe had a product that would convert that into the vectors. So it sounds like a very
called it Trace, or what was it called? They still have that, but it's, yeah, you can convert any photo or any image into vector from raster. Yeah, yes,
I think it might have even gotten rolled in. It might have been called Pathfinder.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
something like that.
And you're old school, dude. That's awesome.
But the problem I always had with it was I was always really obsessive about the number of vector points. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that came out of, like, back then, if you had too many vector points, like your Mac wouldn't run, right? Mm-hmm. Like it couldn't process all that points. And so a lot of times that tool would just like go crazy, you know, to like, especially if it was a sketch or something, like, you know, like hand done, it couldn't do the smooth curves. It would just kind of put points all over the place. So is that a problem with something like Capture? Like, do you go in and clean that image up, or is it like, no, that's fine. I don't care, because I'm not really, that's just an underlayer that I'm working with.
Well, when they showed it off at that Swedish conference, which is where I first heard about it, they did the best case scenarios, right? This guy is this professional logo designer, and he does these beautiful hand-inked bits of logo work that are just incredible, very detailed and intricate on paper. And then he uses this app to then get him into, you know, to quickly save a step and get him into something like Illustrator, where he then goes in and really goes to town on them.
Right.
Now, for him, that's a sketch, but I could clearly tell when he was doing it. These, for a lot of other people, these were finished logos. I mean, they were beautiful. Now, he has a higher standard, so he goes even further with them. But when he put those in, they were virtually perfect, in my opinion. Now, right. When I do it, to answer your question, it's not perfect. It's a little rough. The vectors, sometimes there's a break where I know there shouldn't be a break, or there's whatever. But I'm actually pulling these not into Illustrator and pulling them into Photoshop, and making them a background layer that's then kind of faded out that I'm drawing on top of.
Right. So you're kind of redoing it.
Yeah. So for me, just from a workflow perspective, it's perfect just to get the thing up and out. Now, some might say, well, why don't you just take a picture with the camera and then, you know, Dropbox that photo and then make that your bottom layer? Well, I used to do that as well. The point here is it cuts out like two or three steps of saving it to Dropbox, having it in a file, having it sync, and then go to the desktop, go pull up a file from somewhere. This just is in that ecosystem, so all I got to do is just run it.
Because it goes right into Creative Cloud. Yeah, and just run it. It's all integrated now.
So this has all been good, and this has kind of been my way, and, you know, that is a new twist on it, but really that's kind of the same process. Now, where the iPad Pro comes in has been interesting. So first of all, I guess I should say, I have tested in the last couple of weeks, every drawing, sketching, painting, art app there is, all of them, because I want to know, you know, I just want to know who's doing what and what's going on. So Adobe's been touting their big two entries in the fight, which is Draw and Sketch. Sketch being basically a Photoshop style app, and Draw being a vector-based Illustrator style app. They both have some really interesting strengths and some really weird weaknesses. Oh. And so I just want to address those real quick.
Yeah, I want to know what those are.
Well, and it's hard to talk about this stuff without the Adobe conversation, because they are front and center in all of this, you know?
I'm loving what Adobe is doing.
Oh, they're killing it.
The iPad and stuff now.
Yeah, they're just killing it with the whole CC thing. Everyone thought it was just a way to stop piracy, but it is a value-added, awesome, my favorite subscription.
Yeah, it's funny. I was upset about having to pay it, and now I'm like happy to pay it. I'm like, please take my money.
Yeah, they know they've done right by us. They really have done right by us. They've done what we all feared they wouldn't do, and I'm so glad they did. So anyway, yeah, I'm a huge supporter of it, and I think people should get on board and quit using CS5 or whatever the hell ancient thing they have. So anyway, these two apps are strong in a lot of ways. There's a real simplicity to them, which makes them easy to use. But inexplicably, there's this strange missing things, like Adobe Sketch, which is the Photoshop equivalent, doesn't have layers built in, which is crazy. Every other Photoshop competitor and Photoshop itself and all other iPad apps that purport to be similar to Photoshop, they have layers with, and there's no layers in Sketch I cannot figure out why. Like, you may as well just be using the paper app.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, because that doesn't have that either. And you could argue the tools aren't all that different. So while it's nice to draw with, it feels good with the pencil, feels highly integrated and all of that, not having layers is just silly. Now, some would say, well, just if you're just doing sketches there, well, yeah, okay, fine. I understand that. But then, I don't know. I feel like that hurts them. And it's also a technology or a part of this process that they invented, really. They ought to own it and have that in there.
That's weird. Like you said, it's weird. It's one of those weird limitations.
It's an odd omission, and it's what I'm about to tell you to make it seem even odder. But one of the things I like about that app, though, is this integrate, because again, they're CC enabled apps. So when I'm done, literally, there's a little send button thing at the top where I can send it to Photoshop or Illustrator, either one. And when I saw that, I went, oh, well, that's kind of cool. I guess it'll just put it in my cloud and I can go access it when I want to. So that eliminates a couple steps. That's pretty neat. I'm sitting here testing it at my desktop, sitting on my chair away from my computer. my screen's up and everything. And I'm on a different Wi-Fi network. I'm not even thinking about it. And I say, all right, well, let's send this sketch up there and see what happens. And I send it. And out of the corner of my eye, I see some activity on my screen. I look up. Photoshop is launching on my desktop. And up comes the image I just drew. Boom, right in front of me. And that was like magic. And I realize it's not that crazy, but I didn't expect that kind of integration. That was really cool.
Yeah.
So huge advantage there, in my opinion, to using their apps. Now, here's the inexplicable thing about Draw, which is the vector-based one, which is kind of akin to Illustrator. It's a very similar app in the way it feels and the way it's laid out and everything to the Draw app, but and has the same sort of send to Photoshop or send to Illustrator functionality and all that cool stuff. But it has layers. Hmm. You've got, you know, you could argue that while Illustrator's always had layers and it's important that it does, from a portable perspective, it doesn't really need it. Like, it's not as important because you're just creating a lot of line work.
Right.
Whereas it's very important in the SketchUp app to have layers because you're putting, you know, you're painting behind lines and doing all this other kind of stuff. And this has layers. The other one doesn't. It makes no freaking sense to me.
Yeah.
That it does and the other one doesn't. So, it just feels a little bit like, oh, we got to hurry up, you guys. This Apple Pencil's coming out. We want to be at the forefront of this. We're not quite done, but go ahead and just get it out. There's a little bit of that feeling going on.
Well, hopefully that is the kind of the case. And you know, layers are a thing that they're going to add into it.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully they'll get that feedback and be like, hey, we're using this tool. We're the artists. We need layers.
Yeah. And it's hard not to get hung up on it because it's so integral to what I do.
I mean,
it bugs me. So.
Yeah.
I'm trying all these other apps, right?
Yep.
And it came down to one I have, if you want, I can tell you right now the winner. You want to know the big winner?
Yeah.
All right. The fight happened. All these apps came to the ring. Only one stood when they left. Procreate is the bomb.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really strong. And it's always been good, but it came out with the Pencil came out, immediately had support. It had some other big design changes and some stuff just to sort of tweak their formula that they've been working on for a few years. And it is simple, clean, complex if you want to get deep, crazy control over tools and pens and brushes and quality of those brushes and opacities and paint techniques and effects and all this stuff. Full layer support, which is something you absolutely need. Great integration with things like, you know, saving it out to whatever you need it to be, including PSDs. So you can save it straight out to Photoshop, which is where I'm going to use it. It doesn't, you know, have this cool send to Photoshop capability, but it does let me just immediately send it to Dropbox and then open it when I get to my production machine. And it records every stroke you do so you can create speed drawings of what you've done and share it on, you know, social media or YouTube or whatever you want. That is really wicked. Cool.
That is cool, yeah.
Yeah, that it's even in there. It's basically just math because it doesn't track all the time where you were looking at the TV or your hand came up and you weren't doing anything. So it's not like there's all these pauses like normal speed drawings. We have to edit that stuff out. It just records any time pen touches screen. And so all you get is the art and shows the process from sketch to finish or whatever. It's super cool. And even informative, you're like, oh, yeah, there's the point where I erased that whole piece and started over on that. And, you know, like there's a weird history, like a historical record of what you've done. And it's smooth. I also think it has the least amount of latency with the pen, and the pen already just naturally is not really having any latency issues. But it's peppier than even the Adobe stuff where you just feel like the ink is just flowing out of this pen.
Wow.
And it's a really strong, really great app that I cannot recommend enough. And it's only $5. Like it's a stupid cheap for what it does.
You're making me want to go back and use it more because I've used a bunch of them. I've used a bunch of them too.
Yeah.
I keep coming back to paper, but I think that's because I'm not a professional artist. I doodle a lot and I like to mess around with it. And it's simple, you know, that I like the simplicity of paper, that it's just like, you know, grabbing my Moleskine notebook or something like that. And there's just a few tools and I'm kind of limited. And it's kind of good for me because
I'd put paper up in there in the top three of all these that I tested. I really like paper as well. It's really strong. Yeah.
But I mean, the fact that it doesn't have layers is kind of frustrating. So it's like, if you have your sketch layer and then you're inking on top of it, you know, you're left with an image that you either have to go in and zoom and do a lot of erasing or just live with. I'm going to have sketch lines in my final.
Yeah, and there's some people who are forced to do tricks like, oh, I'll do my sketch layer in photo blue and then I'll select all the photo blue and delete it later. And but that causes weird artifacting. And yeah, so it's not optimal. But for something that you just need to quickly get stuff out and sketch it and be done, nothing wrong with paper. It's pretty good.
I also really, in the past, liked Sketchbook Pro.
Yeah.
Just because of how much complexity it had. Mm-hmm. Like the tools in there to me were like, oh my God, I've got every art pencil that I ever wanted when I was a kid and couldn't afford because it would have cost me like $30,000 to buy all this stuff.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. They were slow to update though.
Yeah. Is that the problem?
They did do it though. So, and I want to say it was only just a few days ago. So I have had some time with Sketchbook Pro, which I had already owned. And it's good. I get the feeling though. So the pencil integration, it works and all that stuff, right? The pressure sensitivity is working, all that stuff. Lay the pencil on the side and create broader strokes. All that stuff's working, but it still feels slower. Hmm. Maybe just not optimized. And it's a thing I just can't say about Procreate. But like Procreate just makes everything else seem a little slower. And I don't, and they're not slow on their own. Like on their own, probably great. But in comparison, it just is so, I don't know if it's just optimized for the platform or just so well suited for maximum speed, you know, balanced with maximum, you know, tools and, you know, stuff that's actually useful or something. But whatever it is, it's just it's running circles around everything else in terms of the latency of the pen and the smoothness of the strokes and me feeling like I'm actually just drawing and not thinking about there's some technology barrier between me and the drawing.
That is such an important thing. And I think that can't be stressed enough about the experience with the Apple Pencil compared to other tools. So there's two things I want to ask you about related to just that part of the process, you know, the actual putting pencil to paper or, you know, digital pencil, I guess now to tablet. And because you've had that as part of your workflow for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually sketching on something like a Wacom.
Yeah. In fact, the Wacom. So I've got a big. I always say Wacom. It's Wacom or Wake. Whatever.
I don't know what the right term is.
Everyone says it different, so I'm just gonna assume that we're all right. But I still have a 22HD at home, or you know, in the studio that I use for pretty much the rest of the process. So you know, you might say, "Well, wow, Procreate sounds like it's got everything you need," and truly, it kind of does. Even lets me. Well, I'm actually not sure about the tech stuff, but. You know, a lot of us cheat now. We cartoonists, we don't hand write our word bubbles anymore. We font it, you know, that's just the way it is. So some of those things are still barriers and there seems to be, you know, there's still reason to go back to the desktop and do some finish work on things. But I could, in theory, do start to finish done comic strips or illustrations with something like Procreate and never touch my desktop. That is, in theory, possible. I haven't quite gotten there yet. So what I've been doing is using it to a point, even sometimes getting inking done and stuff, but then, you know, laying it out in the frames and getting text bubbles together and all this kind of stuff, I'll still do on the desktop. And it's, you know, still a threat. Like it's still a Wacom, you know, using the traditional big tool on a production machine still feels like, let me put it this way. It doesn't feel like the iPad Pro or any other, you know, Surface Pro or anything else out there is rivaling that yet.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's not right there.
There was a lot of people talking about that they felt, I've used a Wacom, the iPad and Pencil has even less latency. It feels even better. Has that been your experience or are they pretty comparable in terms of?
It's the first time that I felt like I had a stylus for an iPad or a portable device that was on at least on par with a Wacom experience. I wouldn't say it exceeds it. I mean, even with Procreate, there's a little bit of latency as compared to my Wacom. Now, in you know, to be, you know, as upfront as possible, I'm in an environment on that Wacom that's virtually the best you could possibly do. I've got a Mac Pro, like the little trash can style. Mm-hmm. Pretty new, you know, setup, screaming fast with lots of RAM and, you know, all the power you'd ever need for something like this. And a Wacom 22 HD, which is, you know, still pretty new and cutting edge for them. And it doesn't, you know, I'm not lacking in that department at all. So it's super fast and really, really smooth and very well integrated into Photoshop and other apps. So it's the best case scenario. Not everyone's going to be working in that scenario. So I totally recognize that. So me making that comparison is maybe not quite as fair as say an average setup, but I will say that the Apple Pencil is the closest it's ever gotten to that. Like it's pretty much there and cool. Feels real, real good. And it's never felt quite so good. I guess the problem is it's not even really a problem, but if you're just painting, if you're just drawing, it's perfectly, you could just live on that iPad Pro. That could be it and nothing else. It's just that there's desktop-like things that you can't do yet. And this is more of an iPad thing or a tablet thing in general, not so much a...
Yes.
You know, this is the whole argument about, well, when are we going to dump our laptops and go full tablet? Well, that when they become more like a full production machine style experience, and maybe they never will be because they're so strong at other things that laptops are terrible at, it's the same problem. And so when I need to add all the things I need to add, sometimes I just need a desktop to do it because that's the way the operating system behaves.
Yeah, where I've landed with it, and I've talked about this on my show, is I think we're going to wind up with kind of three classifications of computer users. And your choice is going to come down not so much to tablet or laptop or desktop. It's going to be more about your workflows. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wanted to start this conversation a little bit in the workflow side of things. And I'm trying to do that more and more when I talk to people about technology. It's like, how do you want to work? How do you prefer to work? And then let's apply the technology that makes sense. And I think Apple was really getting this. Mm-hmm. And it's why they're not going that Microsoft Surface route and trying to cram everything into one device. I think they see that there's going to be a large number of consumers in the consumer market where tablet-based apps and a tablet operating system and a tablet are going to be able to do everything for them.
Right.
And it's a simpler kind of device. It's an easier workflow in a lot of cases. Storage is one of those things that, you know, is moving more and more to the cloud, and that's only going to get better. So that solves kind of that problem that's been around there for a long time. So you're going to have a huge portion of the market that are tablet people. And then you're going to have another portion of the market that are like, I cannot live on any kind of tablet. I need a desktop and I need a notebook experience and I need a full operating system for whatever those reasons are, but they're going to be workflow reasons. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's people like I'm finding myself, you know, I'm doing this experiment because I really like the mobile experience of a tablet versus my notebook. And I really wanted the iPad Pro to be this thing where I'm going to have this be the only thing that I do mobile stuff on. Mm-hmm. And I took a challenge when I got the iPad Pro and said I'm going to go 30 days. I'm only going to take the iPad Pro when I leave the house and I'm going to force myself to kind of use this thing. Now I have to be honest with my audience. I've already broken that rule because I'm a web developer. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying with some of the art stuff, the tools just aren't there yet. I could make it work, but I have to completely restructure my workflow. And I'm in the middle of projects right now and I don't have time to do that. I can see.
Well, not only that though, wouldn't you have to restructure it in a way that it would disrupt. Because none of that stuff is as smooth as your current workflow.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's some tools there. The main issue I have is I do local development, and I have a local development environment set up on my Mac, and I can't do that on the iPad. So all that has to move to the cloud. Right. And that's not that difficult, and the tools are there to make that happen. But I just don't have time to deal with it. I don't know if I ever will. That's the interesting thing. But I mean, what I'm discovering though is I still prefer, so, you know, 99% of the time I've been able to take that. I just had one project I was working on. It's like, I'm going to be out of the house for 4 hours. I have, you know, 3 hours of time where I'm just going to be sitting around, because my kids were doing something. So I, you know, was out doing something. And I'm like, I just had to wait for them. And I'm like, I need to get this project done. And I can't do it with the iPad Pro. And I don't want to waste those 3 hours because those are precious hours of time for me. So getting back to, you know, what I was saying. So I think what's going to break out is I think you're going to have people that do live on tablets. And I think you're going to have people that are only desktop people. And I think you're going to have people that are sort of hybrid people. I think I'm going to end up being one of these hybrid people. But I think the larger portion is going to probably move to tablets. And I think that's sort of what Apple's seeing. It's like they're like, this is kind of the future. And some people are getting frustrated because they're putting a lot of their efforts, you know, on that side of the business.
Well, but, and that was going to be my... So I want to, remain a huge Apple fanboy. I love the products they make. I think the iPad Pro is awesome, and I'm jazzed to use it constantly. And I don't mean just for art. It's the best like browsing experience and like split screen, do other stuff together experience. I can draw and look at reference photos on that thing.
Yep.
Which again brings it closer to the realm of desktop.
So is Adobe supporting split screen and just Procreate support?
Procreate is. The Adobe stuff does not yet. I mean, I can do the whole pull the tab from the left and check Twitter and things like that, but I can't keep it up. So they haven't yet, but one would hope and assume that they would at some point. It's another advantage to Procreate is it's very flexible that way. Oh, the other thing I like about Procreate is instead of having to orient the iPad different angles to draw, because you know if you're working on paper you move it around. The nice thing about Procreate is that it's a virtual sheet of paper in there, so you just multi-touch that paper around any orientation you want very, very quickly with zero latency or slowdown, and it feels like you're moving paper around in a virtual space. It's awesome.
We didn't even mention palm rejection, and that was another thing. Palm rejection with the pencil is key.
It changes everything. I'd make a recommendation here on the Wacom as well, which doesn't do palm recognition. I mean, it only works with the pen.
Right.
I've long held that the way to use that thing is you either make one yourself or you get one of those gloves that just creates a very smooth connection between your palm and the glass or the surface.
Yep.
And I recommend that same thing for the iPad because I just feel like it just gets in the way. You get sweaty or it just gets hung up or you got, you know, your hands... slowing you down or whatever, just get a nice, I always just buy these cheap, like $2 gloves at like TJ Maxx, like crappy winter gloves, like the real thin kind that you'd like ladies would wear. And I cut out the,
fingers,
the two, middle finger, index finger and thumb holes. I cut those all out. I leave a little stretch between them so that it all holds together. So only part of the glove that's actually got fingers in it are the pinky and the, whatever finger we never have a name for, ring finger.
Yeah.
And just keep one of those in my little case, and it's great. It's just pop it on, boom, and you're not smudging up your glass. Because the one thing I'll say about the Pro is it feels like we've gone back to the original iPad days where it is not finger smudge resistant at all.
It is. Oh man, it's terrible. Mine looks awful all the time, and it's so huge, it's like impossible to clean.
Yeah, it's really hard. I have like a little ShamWow looking thing. And I'm just like cranking on it. Like, why is this not, you know, there's always some smudge from somebody's finger. And it's from those early days where we've forgotten because they got so good after that. They're like, with the iPad 3, way anti-smudge and moving forward. And so iPads have had not a problem for a while. I don't know why the Pro doesn't have that
oleophobic coating is what they call it. It's supposed to, you know, reject oils, but... never been great, but it's, you're right. There's something about the iPad Pro, I don't know if it's just because it's such a huge piece of glass that it's more noticeable. I can't imagine that it doesn't have the same technology on it, but I'm totally with you. Mine's like filthy all the time. I'm like, ew.
It's frightening to look at. You look at it and go, holy crap, get that out of here. But anyway, it's a small thing. It's no big deal. But where was I headed with that? I had a point with that. I was say something about...
I got off on the palm rejection stuff.
Yeah, and I don't remember now. Dang it. Ah, crap. It was real good though. I was heading toward a
I shouldn't have interrupted you.
Knowledge. No. That was a decent offshoot anyway, but I just cannot remember what the crap it was. It was something good. Where were we talking? What was the whole point of the original conversation? We were saying something about you were
workflows and
I was about to complain. Yeah.
Yeah.
So on the Mac side, it's been, you know, it's been interesting. When things really took off on iOS, you started to see them get weird with like, well, what if we had this launch pad or what's it called? Central Command or what's the name of that thing? Launch pad.
Right.
Oh, looks God, just I hate like that an thing. iPad, and you can just scroll through it and there's your apps and this feels like an iPad and no one likes that. Everyone hates that. And
does anybody use it?
No.
I every time I bring this up, I'll get like two emails from people like, oh, I love it. I use it all the time. But I think that's about
there's
it.
Always
those two guys.
Yeah, they're outliers, man. There's no way that this is a common thing. And so as the more you saw them trying to wedge this stuff into the desktop, the more it just irritated me. But that's fine. I can deal with that from an OS perspective. But then you started to see their pro stuff start to get tweaked and simplified. And, you know, we don't have to go on long about it, but everyone knows how things went with Final Cut Pro. And
right.
And to some degree, although people seem to really like it, but Pro Tools is in a similar boat. They did a big overhaul of that. They made it cheaper. Like in some ways, it's great. It's very consumer friendly to make these things more accessible and less expensive. But for the pros, it just made everyone drift toward Adobe and Premiere because they were like, well, you know,
right.
this isn't what I'm doing. And so it feels like, to your point of them throwing so much of their development and time and effort toward mobile and tablet and everything else, that they seem like they're not, you know, not neglecting things on the Mac side, but
they're slowing down for sure.
Slowing down. Yeah, they absolutely are. I mean, they know, look, I think they're smart. They know what the future is. The problem is there's this transition, right? It's like this middle bit that sucks and we all have to figure out what the transition is and how we're going to make things work. And there are a huge bunch of industries and businesses and designs and things that require the current status quo. So you've got to be careful with that transition. And I think they've done an okay job, but
it hasn't been great. I mean, we can be honest and say it hasn't been great.
Yeah.
They're managing it okay, but they could be doing better, I think.
Right. And it hasn't hurt their bottom line. So I understand why they're managing it okay and not great, because there's not a big, I mean, and financially, there's not a huge reason for them to do that.
Right.
The people who are happiest are the ones they're serving the best right now. Those who are less happy are a shrinking fringe of people like you and me.
Well, and let's be honest, that group of people too will put up with a lot more abuse.
Oh yeah, because we have, you know, yeah, sure. We've been here for all that, right? We've seen the storm come in.
It's not like the 90s. I mean, we can say that very easily. I mean, even for all the bad, I think, you know, we're still in a pretty good place.
But yeah, not using,
it's frustrating.
You know, it is frustrating. It can be. So to my point, long story short, I bought that Mac Pro and love it in every way except for the fact that the AMD GPUs that are in that thing, mm-hmm, are problematic. They're known to have some issues where dealing with the mini display ports and sound will sometimes just cause the GPUs to lock. Not the rest of the computer. Everything else goes on in its merry way, but the GPUs lock, which means screen locks, even though all the processes and everything are still happening in the background. So for pretty much the entirety of my ownership of the thing, that's been sort of an issue here and there. Really bad during what was before El Capitan? My brain just went dead.
Mavericks. Yosemite, sorry.
Yosemite. Yosemite was a dark period for me.
Yeah.
Yosemite turned out to be the time when things worked the least well. And the problem was, I run the kind of production here that I need my Mac to be like Macs have always been for me, which is they always work and they never break down and I never have weird issues, because that's been the truth for my whole Mac life. They've always been great.
Right.
In every other way, this thing's been great except for this one thing. But it's one of those ones where Apple never says anything. They're slow to even respond.
Yeah, acknowledge there's a problem.
That something's going on. And why? Well, because there's probably, I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are, but there aren't that many of these. You know, this isn't the world's most popular Mac by a long shot. This is a small subset of their market that they are trying to appease, the old pro market that is a dying race. It just is. So they, you know, they don't treat it the same as if even if I had an iPhone problem, I'd get quicker response
than
I do out of this thing. And it just, I can just feel it being slowly, whatever. So I don't have time to go and wait for Genius appointments. I can't do it. So I've had to figure out ways around it. Thankfully, El Capitan is a huge improvement to it, but it still happens here and there. Mm. Very rarely, but when it does, it is super frustrating. It's usually in the middle of a podcast. There's nothing I can do but hard reboot the whole thing because there's nothing I can do to reclaim the screen.
And that's weird. And it's affected by audio, even though it's a GPU sort of thing.
It's an audio insertion error that causes the GPU to lock up. And the reason that we've been able to figure out all this, and there's a big thread on Mac Rumor forums that I follow that,
of course,
I'm not the only one obviously dealing with this. But it appears to be something with DisplayPort, which can carry audio.
Right.
It's something about that and specifically these AMD GPUs. So the truth is, if I kept pushing it and then escalated it and escalated it, well, sure, eventually they would just replace my GPUs and everything would be great. But I don't live that kind of lifestyle. I don't have time for any of it. So what I've got is a machine that's well under warranty and still has, you know, AppleCare, and I could totally go for it at any time, but I don't have time to do it. I can't just schedule a thing 2 weeks off, go in there and wait, have them not being able to reproduce it because it's totally random. It has no reproducibility to it. So they would just sit there for hours going, well, we can't get it to do it. I'm like, well, that's because, you know.
Right.
But here, you know, I could show them.
Well, we've all been in that fast.
It's just asking too much from something that should just freaking work for me. But then I have this overall feeling that they don't care about my subset of the market anymore.
Well, that's where the real problem lies, is right. When you start having customers that are having that feeling, that's when it's gotten really bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think Apple wants to have customers that have that feeling, but I just sometimes feel like they're stretched so thin with resources and they've got so many things going on. And then I get frustrated when just this week, one of the things that came up, they came out with that battery case, right? And that's getting all this buzz because it's kind of ugly. It's got the hump that Tim Cook doesn't want you to call a hump on the back. And
it's it looked like a vacuum formed iPhone 4.
Well, and so I see something like that, and then I hear a story like yours, and I'm like, okay, here's production people that are having a real problem with something here, and now Apple has come out with a battery case, and I get why they're doing it, right? Because people go into the Apple store, they want a case. Apple has numbers to show them. Everybody puts their phone in a case. Battery is also a thing that a lot of people worry about with their devices, and they buy battery cases, and so Apple wants a slice of that pie. Right. So here's a way to get a slice of that pie. But at the same time, there's a million third-party solutions. So Apple's product does not solve a problem for their customers that needed solving. Yet here you are with a problem that does need solving. Yeah. And they used a bunch of engineering and design resources and stuff on this other thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's so weird because
I know they're not the same engineers, too, just so I don't get emails. Right. I get that there's not crossover. But the point is the same. You can look at a lot of the things they're doing. And they've got, you know, other projects going on, and there's parts of their core business where they have unhappy customers that aren't getting attention.
Yeah, and I understand the squeaky wheel gets the grease and all that. I totally get it. And then we're not a loud wheel anymore, the pro market and whatever. But this was an expensive machine.
Yeah.
These
are your best customers, though. They may not be your largest customer base, but they're the ones that are probably spending the most money.
Yeah, you just said what I've been trying to formulate. That's exactly it. And it's frustrating to me. Now, it's not like when I have called, they've been great.
Right.
They all have all these suggestions. It's not that, like that. It's just this overall feeling I get that that part of what I'm doing doesn't matter to them the way it used to matter to them. Huh. And I think that's just true. And I don't blame them. The market forces are what they are. But I think there ought to be some effort. And you know what the truth of the matter is? I was feeling this long before Tim Cook, long before Steve Jobs passed. Like,
right. No, this isn't a Cook thing. Apple thing.
It's an Apple thing, exactly. So a lot of people just always want to say, well, it's because Tim Cook. You know, no, everyone needs to quit doing that. Like Apple, Apple's too big of a monster to lay specific weird things. I mean, would that battery pack hump gotten past Steve Jobs' sensibilities? Probably not.
No.
I think he would have said, guys, what the hell is this thing? Go back. Do this over again. This is terrible. Spread the battery out. Do something. Like, he wouldn't have done that. Right. But outside of that sort of thing, I think you know, generally Apple is Apple. And we've, and the writing's been on the wall really since, like, you know, you could go back to like 2010, 2011 and go, yeah, that's about when things started to turn. Like the Mac quit being in the spotlight, except, you know, notebooks continue to be a huge deal.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like, well, I feel like the Air crowd doesn't know what to do with themselves right now. Like there's, the Mac ecosystem is in a weird place right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, even, and so to bring it back to kind of your world and the Pro thing, the one thing I wanted to ask you about, I mean, obviously the Mac Pro, I don't know when you bought it, and you know what your current upgrade cycle looks like, but I think there's a lot of pros that I know that look at the 27-inch iMac and they look at the Mac Pro, and I'm seeing more and more of them choose the iMac.
Yeah, for me it was, I mean, it's funny because I say this with some regret. I think if I were to do it over again, I probably would have done the 27-inch iMac, Retina iMac with, you know, some beefed up stuff. The problem was the beefed up stuff put me awful close to the price point.
Yeah.
Of the full Pro. And I had some other stuff here already, like some displays and things that meant that I wouldn't, you know, it wasn't like I had to invest in new displays and things. So it, you know, price wise, I was already real close to that. The other thing was performance wise, I really, really wanted to go full solid state storage across the board.
Yep.
And maximum RAM capability. So I put 32 gig in this thing.
Those things are screamers. I mean, they're
beasts,
screaming machines. But yeah. I mean, even now we're hearing inklings, oh, they're not updating quickly enough. And, you know, Intel's moved on. And when are we going to get an update? And some people are expecting an update soon. And some people are saying, well, they're not going to update it. And because there are a lot of pros that are moving to the iMacs, and the iMacs are getting in that range. So getting back to the point you were making earlier, yeah, I mean, on the Mac side, there is sort of some confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I even brought this up on my last show. I think I want to see Apple get back to that four quadrant system where you have, you know, consumer desktop, consumer notebook, pro desktop, mm-hmm. pro notebook.
Yeah.
You know, like you mentioned the Air. I said on my last show, I think Apple's going to just do away with the Air and go back to, we have a consumer notebook, it's called the MacBook, and we have a consumer notebook for pros, or a pro notebook, and it's called the MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see the same thing up on top. You know, you've got this weird thing, you know, the iMac is both a consumer and a pro Mac, and then you have the Mac Pro. So it's sort of like, where does the Mac Pro fit into that?
Yeah, it does. And in some ways it does feel like a throwback to an era that is not here anymore. But then on the other hand, I need it to exist. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're totally in this boat. And I'm glad that we ended up on this conversation, because I get a lot of emails about this. I get a lot of people questioning. I work with people. I have a guy I work with who's a designer, and he's like, do I get the iMac? Do I get the Mac Pro? And we had like a 2-week conversation back and forth. He ended up with the Pro, because he's always had the Pro stuff. And he does a lot of work with large, you know, photo files in Photoshop. And for the same reasons you made your choice, he's like, I want all the RAM. I want all that, you know, I want just this massive machine that could just crunch data all day long.
Yeah. I want to poop video out in no time. I want to have it render things so quickly. It's, you know, I want to be as cutting edge as I can, but I want it to be a Mac, right? I could go build this PC or buy this PC. I could get a Windows 10 box that would do all of this, maybe more, and certainly be more upgradable, and I could SLI that thing. I could do all kinds of things to the PC side of it. But I also know what that means. That means I'd also be on the PC side of it. I don't want to be, you know, it's where I play my video games. It's all I want, my PC. But I want, you know, part of me is just like, Apple, please don't push me to a place where I have to do that. I don't want to do that. Like the next round, like if you told me right today, if you said, Scott, all right, well, when you feel like you've bled that Mac Pro for all it's worth, which honestly could take a very long time. I had my previous Mac Pro since 2008, and that thing was awesome until the minute I turned it off. It could be a very long time till I need another one, except for this video problem. This may negate the...
Well, hopefully, it sounds like they can solve that with software, or they've been tweaking it with software at least.
Yeah, definitely. It feels like driver stuff. I don't know if it's a problem with AMD. Maybe AMD's the problem. I don't know. But anyway, if you ask me today, though, so Scott, let's say you're required to buy a new rig next year to replace your high-powered, you know, desktop-based stuff, what would you do? Given everything you know about what's happening, I'm slightly tempted to go PC.
Yeah.
I haven't said that in I don't know how long. Now, I wouldn't say that about Android tablets or an Android phone or even like, well, if I want an all-in-one PC, I'd go on iMac, right? But if you're talking on like top-end, blazing fast solution with integration with the tools I need and use, which are fully wonderful with Adobe over there. They work great in the Windows environment. There's no longer, you know, in other words, I don't need Final Cut anymore.
Right.
Or, you know, platform exclusive stuff anymore. So if you ask me that, I can't believe I'm even saying the words, but yeah, I'd be tempted.
Well, you're in that place though, too, where you have another big side of your life, which is the gaming side too. Mm-hmm. So in some ways it simplifies, again, you're getting back to what we call gaming part of a workflow, but I mean, it is in your case, right?
Yeah, a lot of cases it is. And I use a PC for tons of gaming. It's a screaming fast PC, an awesome computer that I've even been tempted a couple of times, like, what if I put everything on there? And this, but then what does that do to my podcasting world? And, you know, I start thinking about all this crossover and it, here's the truth of the matter. What I do on a Mac isn't even coming close to being rivaled on a PC. A PC is not giving me anything productivity-wise that I wouldn't rather do on my Mac. I prefer all of that on the Mac, bar none. There's even just little tools, like weird little things that I use that the PC's never seen, but yet there they are on the Mac. They're being updated all the time.
They don't have Text Expander. I can't go there.
Right. Like, like all of those kinds of things, you just start adding them up in your head and you're like, no, I really like how I get things done on my Mac and I don't want that to change.
Because your workflow would change. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same thing I was saying about the iPad Pro with my web workflow. I can make it work, but now I've got to rethink all that stuff. I've got to find new tools. I've got to redo it. And do I have the time or the energy that I want to invest in that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like sitting here right now talking to you, I realize that any second now, if it decided that now it wanted to have one of its farts, my Mac Pro could do it. And it goes like sometimes 3-4 weeks of hard use without a thing. No glitch, no nothing. But then once in a while it'll happen. During the previous version in Yosemite, it would happen every day, a couple times a day.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. So clearly it's software. It has to be. And they're being so weirdly quiet about it. I don't mean to just complain about it, but it's like Apple's breaking. They're breaking my heart a little, and it's. But they're doing it in a way that's kind of weird. Like if I'd have bought that iMac, the 27-inch iMac,
right?
I wouldn't probably be having this conversation at all. I'd be thrilled with that thing, and not even really talking about it. But I don't like hybrid drives. I want them to go full solid state. I want to be able to very easily and less expensively add additional storage. Like it's not exactly what a pro wants. And that's why these people have this argument. Like these pros that email you, they're like, well, I think I'm going to go iMac this time because of this, this, and this, and this. Well, they're making some concessions, you know, that they shouldn't have to make, I think. Mm. And at the same time, Apple, they're already not the popular, you know, they sell a fraction of their computers that everyone else sells on the Windows platform. That's always been true, right? Well, that's not any different now. And they, well, why would they be overly concerned with the pro market? Like, we're not a very big thing anymore. Yeah. I hate to say it. We're just not.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, we've had these conversations. It's just, there's a changing landscape in their, you know, they're changing along with it. And unfortunately, some people get, you know, left in the wake and are out there floating and have to find a different way or a different solution. Let's move on to something more, finish up with something more positive.
All right.
And fun. I think that's the
key. Oh, I like fun. Point. Always fun. Yeah. It's good.
So I'm just going to do a quick, I thought we might take a little bit about gaming, but I think let's just turn it into, because we're running kind of long. Let's do a little what are you playing sort of thing on the on either iOS or Mac that you're really liking. Because I know you do gaming and you do hardcore gaming, but you're also into casual games and stuff on the
iPad.
Yeah,
I love mobile and the App Store and all that stuff is, I mean, I do.
So maybe what are you playing right now on your iOS devices that you're really liking?
Oh, probably too many to mention, but I'll focus in on a couple. So I'm really embarrassed actually by this. I usually, you know, I'm a guy who works long hours and I it's all self-imposed. But when I go to bed, I try to, you know, I need rest. We're supposed to all sleep. That's a human need.
Right.
The other night, I made a horrible error, and I'm embarrassed as to what the error was. Okay. So
this is going to be good.
Well, I've spent a good amount of time since getting the Pro trying to find out what games are really cool on the Pro. Like, the advantages of the larger form factor mean something to gaming. And in some ways, it makes some games worse, and it makes other games incredibly good. I would give you an example. Like, Loot and Legends is this fantastic kind of D&D sort of like experience.
Ooh, I don't know this game.
Oh, it's fantastic. Oh, my gosh.
And I'm a D&D nerd from way back. So.
Oh, you'd love it. Because it's all very meta, too. It's like you're playing a game of D&D, but you're actually controlling these characters. It's based on a card game or an actual board game, which is very popular. But anyway, it involves cards and turn-based moves, and it's very, very fun. Maybe one of my favorite games on iOS ever. It's really, really good. And it was already good on my iPad Mini and iPad Air that my daughter has. But it's incredible on the Pro. It's just so benefits from the larger screen. So there's an example of one I've been playing a ton of. Others would include like, what's it called? Crap. It's the zombie one where it's the third iteration of this game. And Outbreak something. Anyway, I wish I knew. The name's not coming to me. Anyway, that game is super good. And games that just give you more room to see a bigger space, like board game like games, you know.
There was one that was based on or sort of like the board game Pandemic.
Oh, right? And that's good on there too, by the way. Pandemic.
Oh, they actually have an iOS version.
They actually do, but it's a different game. The one I'm thinking of is like, it's just right on the tip of my tongue.
While you think about that, I'll give you. I mean, I've been playing a lot of more Hearthstone.
It's amazing on there.
Yeah. I'm hoping they'll bump up the graphics. Occasionally, sometimes you're like, oh, yeah, this is just being scaled up. Mm-hmm. But even just the fact that it's a scaled up game, but you have kind of more space to play around with.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can actually read the card text because I'm getting older and my eyesight's going. So
me too. My eyes suck. The close stuff's starting to get worse. That's the other thing I like about Pro is finally I can see all this stuff really up close and nice. But even games with like, I don't know, virtual joysticks and stuff, I found some joy in that because
it's not too kind of big to hold.
It is. Well, okay, the ones where they have specific placement for joysticks is a bad experience because then you have to put your thumbs there,
right?
Those that let it be a little more virtual and just kind of wherever your hands are on the left or right of the iPad, which is a lot of them, so that's good, but that makes that experience a little bit better. And what you're getting is this very high performance, amazing, you know, larger screen, just a much more high fidelity experience, and four speakers. If you're not using headphones, those four speakers are incredible on
there. Yeah, the sound is great. One thing I've thought, and I brought this up on my show, and I haven't tried it yet. I ended up getting one of the SteelSeries game controllers for my new Apple TV.
Oh, yeah.
And I know those things will work with iOS devices. I thought, you know, for parents, especially people who travel a lot, this could be a great little like mobile like gaming platform. You get a couple little controllers and you just prop it up like a screen, right? And do games that will allow controller support.
Is that like, the Nimbus model?
Yeah.
The one? Yeah, I want one of those real bad. Those seem cool.
It works great with the Apple TV. We're playing a lot of games on our Apple TV. But then again, I think it's because when we moved, we never hooked our Wii back up.
Right.
And I mean, that's the level of gamer that I am. We had a Wii and we did Wii Sports and, you know, very not hardcore stuff. The Lego games, you know, as soon as the Lego games come to the Apple TV, it's like, oh, well, we never need a console.
All bets
again.
Are off. Yeah. I totally understand that. They're going to finally be that, I think, the device that serves that casual market in a way that all these others have tried and not done great at.
It's just, it's having one box. It's not having to have like, you know, three things hooked up to the TV and switching the HDMI. It's just like, I want to watch TV. Apple TV. I want to watch a movie. It's Apple TV. I want to play, you know, a Lego game or, you know, I don't know what else is on there. Geometry Wars. We just started playing, which is
That game is great. Geometry Wars 3 is really good. Yeah.
And you know, it's like, it's just all right there. Right. And it's all on one thing. So, you know, for someone like me who doesn't play, you know, video games all that frequently, it just makes everything simpler. So,
yeah, no, I agree with that. So, okay. So the embarrassing story.
Oh, we didn't even get to that part yet.
Yeah, and there are plenty of really good games that just scale up well or are just really well suited to that. And also, you know, you're seeing a lot of new stuff come out that seems to be optimized. So that's good. And I could go on about 10 other titles, but the one I want to tell you about is the embarrassing one. So I used to be a big fan, if you remember way back in like the Sally Spa days, like the time management games where, you know, Diner
Dash.
I
never played those, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. I know the genre you're talking about.
Yeah, and as the levels go higher, you're making more food and talking to more customers and you're trying to ramp up your stuff and upgrading your equipment and all that. I've always been a big fan of it and I always like different iterations of it. And there's this it's not even that new, but it's a game called Cooking Fever.
Okay.
And it's super goofy and like, looks like it was designed anyway. The aesthetics are aimed at, you know, 12-year-old girls, basically. I thought, well, let's just see what this is like. And I try, and this is a thought I'm having at like 9:30 at night. And I fired that thing up. And it's so good on that format, on that size of screen and in that format of whatever. And it's a free-to-play game, so it's got some of those trappings, but I haven't had to spend a dime. I look up again later. It's 2:30 in the morning. Playing that freaking game, dude.
What's it? And it's called Cooking
Fever, I believe.
Cooking Fever.
Right. Is it right? The names are failing me and I forgot to bring my iPad.
Well, I'll do all the research and we'll get all the right stuff in the show notes, even if we get it wrong. So
yeah, and here it is. It's called, it might be iPad only. That's why it's not showing up on my phone. Oh, that's interesting. Well, anyway, yeah, it's like in the top 10 of the free stuff. Yeah,
there is a thing called Cooking Fever and it's got a 4.5 rating. It's like a girl with holding a big hamburger.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's the one. And I now own a bakery where I'm doing bakery stuff and soon I'll be able to afford the Chinese restaurant up the street and I'll be doing that. It's super stupid and great. It's kind of great. It's hard for me to explain.
This is where Apple has cornered the market on gaming, right? Really is in these kinds of genres. So,
yeah. And these guys making millions of dollars a day. These developers on enough people who spend money on gems and crap, even in free to play games. It's just insane. But I found a real uptick lately in my desire to like pull down as many experiences I can find that seem to do well on a larger format like that. So it's kind of my goal every day to say, ooh, I wonder if this puzzle game's any better or whatever.
Yeah. And we're kind of experiencing the same thing with the Apple TV, right? A lot of the stuff that showed up early so far has just been stuff that's kind of scaled up or redone for that size screen. And right. I think we're even getting that with the iPad Pro. We're just at the tip of the iceberg. This was kind of exciting about these two new platforms that Apple put out this year is that developers are going to start to get creative about what they do with the screens and the more real estate and stuff like that. And that's when it's going to get really, really interesting.
Yeah. What I hope happens is I hope the Pro is very successful and has a pretty broad install base so that the developers have that motivation to develop, not specifically for it, but enhance it for those users.
Correct. Yeah.
It's a slippery slope because you don't want to make that experience so much better that you're kind of screwing your other more installed base. I don't know.
But you could have things where, like, you know, in a certain game, maybe there's an important resource tray or heads up display that you have to pull up maybe on the iPad version or the iPhone version and buy it, you know, through a swipe or something like that. But it can be up there all the time on the iPad or on the iPad Pro, right? You can do those sorts of things. And I'm not being very creative, but, you know, developers will get very creative about how they do sorts of things. And like the Apple TV, there's a lot of opportunity to develop new kind of experiences outside of just games that I think haven't been explored yet with certain apps, you know, and there's probably certain apps that you would think, oh, that's going to be really stupid. Why would you ever put that on a TV? But some developer's going to figure out, you know, how it makes sense to do a to-do list app or something on the Apple TV. And we're going to like be blown away. We're going to be like, oh, my God, I never thought I'd want my to-do list on an Apple TV. But here it is. And this thing's awesome.
So. Yeah, I hope they can replicate it there. It seems like so far they're doing OK. And I really like the idea of that the ecosystem extending to the TV in a way that, you know, we've been begging for years now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interactive TV, I think, is finally happening. There's a lot of the channels and people who are adding things into their apps where you can bring up information. So a lot of the educational channels and things like that. So you're watching the video, But now you can actually, you know, rather than sitting there with your iPad and pulling up stuff, oh, what is that? You know, I want to find out more about that creature they just told me about. You can do it right there on the screen, right? You can have a slide out. You can have a click thing, and the video keeps going, and now you're getting more information, and you're getting other stuff all in that one space. So
I think
there's going to be a lot more of that happening as people figure this stuff out. And same thing with the iPad Pro. So it's exciting times. I mean, I know Apple's changing, and we talked about maybe some of the downsides of that, but there's also this upside to it as well.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part. It hasn't waned my love for their products at all. It's just making me rethink what I have to do to get work done.
Yeah.
And that's a weird place to be because it's the thing that makes it so the other stuff you can afford, you know, yeah. Like you got to get work done so you can buy the next iPad. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a very weird place to be as a longtime Apple fan, as a casual fan or someone who's just getting into their products. It's probably the best time ever.
Yeah.
You know, but we have this weird transition to get through. And
yeah, we're the old guard. We've been with them since the beginning. So,
yeah.
You take a deeper look at things, but
we're like the people who were like our age in the 90s. Things went weird, except that was real dire. You know, this is a different kind of weird.
Yeah.
But it's our generation's version of those guys, you know, and there'll be some future time 20 years from now where Apple's shifting to
cars,
brain chips, right? Or cars or something. And all the portable users are gonna be like, well, what about my iPhone?
You know? What about my iPhone? You're making flying cars.
So who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. History repeats itself. Well, cool. Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this stuff. This was a lot of fun. I wish we should do it more, but you know, again, schedules and timing, and you are a busy man and there's a good reason for that. And so you want to tell people, you know, sure, all the stuff that you're into. I mean, we mentioned the webcomic, and people should definitely check that out. I think maybe there's a whole group of podcasting people that don't know that that's part of what you do. But
yeah, it's funny because it's always been about 50-50 in terms of my both my time and my revenue these days. But it's actually a good time to check out the comic because I'm about to finally deliver this month, actually this week.
Your book, right?
Yeah, the books get it to us from the printer today, I think.
Awesome.
I got to check with my production guy. But anyway, we put together a book that has the best strips from the last 14 years and very proud of that. It's a long time to be working on a thing that I can't believe it's been that long, actually. 14 years is crazy.
We probably should have mentioned what your strip is about so people know. It's good geek culture, gaming, and you hit a little bit of everything, right?
Yeah, Matt, even Apple stuff. Like it's just about kind of, it's a reflection of what I'm into, and that's, you know, film and TV and video games and, you know, technology and computers, whatever. And it's, you know, there's a million of those out there. But, you know, when I started in 2001, it was still a pretty new idea. And there's a ton of it. So if you want to go see the entire archive, it's all available over at myextralife.com. And that book, which is due out any second after it fulfills all the Kickstarter folks, we will have more available on a store shortly thereafter. So it's something for people to look forward to. And of course, for everything else I have going on, shows and otherwise, go to frogpants.com. And I'll tell you what, the next time I come on, all we got to do is we just got to time these things around big Apple product times.
Okay.
So the next time there's something cool out, we just need to get together.
I don't think
we shouldn't do it over the stupid battery pack, but something else. We'll wait for it and we'll know when it happens. We'll know.
Well, you know, hopefully they update the Mac Pro. Maybe that's the next thing we can talk about.
That'd be great. Or if I do get some, you know, some kind of resolution to what I'm dealing with, I wouldn't mind coming on and talking about how that went.
Well, you know, we're here on the MacCast. The community often steps up, so hopefully someone will hear this and maybe somebody has the magic solution for you too. And
that would be lovely. If anyone's
got any
ideas, I would eat that. I would eat that like Christmas candy on Halloween or something.
Cool. Well, again, thanks, Scott, for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, man.
So there you go, Scott Johnson. Please go check out all of his stuff, myextralife.com and frogpants.com for all of the podcast stuff. His shows are great. If you're into geek, nerd culture stuff, it's the network for you. So you really should check out those shows. You can find them on iTunes, of course, as well. And I appreciate Scott coming on once again to chat with us. But with that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander Touch for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can find more information, details on all of the great Smile apps at smilesoftware.com/Maccast. And Gazelle. Gazelle is a fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. They are at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You'll find them at backbeatmedia.com. If you have a comment, a question, a topic you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, I welcome your emails. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You can also leave voicemail on our listener hotline. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything we talked about in this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you're on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, what have you, I'm pretty much MacCast everywhere, but specifically on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Or you can check out the Google Plus community, and that is google.com/plus, and that's the plus symbol, /plus MacCast. That's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.